I enjoyed that. A quick disclaimer. I usually have a very firm rule that I usually refuse to do a talk after anyone who's spoken about chemsex or novel psychoactive substances, because it's just impossible to follow. It's just too interesting. But nevertheless, here I am. I'll give you another disclaimer. I'm here to shamelessly promote the service that I'm very fortunate to be a part of, which is Find and Treat. It was parked outside earlier in terms of the front end of the service, the van. Did anyone get to have a look at it? Quick show of hands. Yep. Well done. Well, I hope you'll be converted to the mission, because I'm very quickly going to just basically cover a journey from basically a mobile X-ray unit. It was a TB-specific service, which really evolved into a service for people, not pathogens. And that is our mantra, people, not pathogens. And it's a service that's been going for over a decade now, despite the best efforts of the system. And it's a service that tries to bring together these two words, infection and inequality. And there's not really much of an agenda around infection and inequality in this country, despite the rather amazing statistics that we see in terms of risk of infection when we look at homeless people compared to the general population. And so I'm going to talk about, you've had a new word today, and it's a brilliant word, wasn't it? It was salutogenic. It's great to add a new word to the lexicon. I'm going to take the courageous liberty of giving you another new word. Hopefully it's not that new. It's called syndemic. Anyone heard of syndemic? Excellent. So I'm going to talk about syndemic, and syndemic from the perspective of TB infection and hepatitis amongst the homeless population, which is not really on the map, or certainly not on the map as much as it should be. And we're going to take a little look at some nice guidance there. And then I'm going to conclude by bringing to bear some of the basic theories of rocket science to explain how we got to where we are and where we might need to go. So without further ado, what do? Well, the front end was parked outside early, and it's not rocket science. It quite simply takes the technologies for screening for the big important public health infections, and it takes them to the street, and it takes them to where people can easily access them. We take the service to you. We've packed a lot of tech on the van. Some of it's now commissioned, some of it's still quite experimental and supported with research monies, but nonetheless, we've done everything possible over the years to try and build on what I call an opportunity of encounter. Most of our work and effort goes into trying to get face to face with people. And I'm not here for a rant, but I'll have a quick one. I recently put in a proposal to a body that will remain unnamed to provide a screen for latent TB infection. Perfectly credible, perfectly evidence-based, and we've got a client in front of us, we've got venous access, and a commissioner that says only test for one thing. This integration agenda just falls flat on its face when you try and actually, you climb out your trench and you get in the boardroom and you actually have a conversation with people who are supposedly commissioning services, and they're still in they're in the dark ages. There really isn't an integration agenda here. And similarly, we've packed more opportunities in terms of vaccination onto the service. As I said, results are on the spot, and that's weird, isn't it? To actually have a test and then get a result. I mean, it's such a strange phenomena. Just a chest X-ray usually involves a two-week wait to see a GP, a letter to go to a specific hospital somewhere. You turn up on the right floor at the right time with the right ID. You don your NHS gown of humiliation and wander around with your backside hanging out for a few hours. Eventually someone will irradiate you, and then they'll tell you to sod off and you'll never get the result. We can do that in 90 seconds. And so we're bringing to bear these sort of ideas onto other areas, particularly Hep C, and onward care. And from a TB perspective, we achieve the same treatment outcomes in the people that we find on that van is achieved in the general population. And I'm not talking short course treatment here. I'm talking a minimum of 6 months, usually 9 or 2 years if you're unlucky enough to have a drug-resistant form of the disease, which is unfortunately very prevalent in amongst homeless people. And we want to bring to bear these models of treatment support for Hep C. So, infection. I'm obsessed with infection. Fair enough, but it's writ large in the literature. It disproportionately affects vulnerable groups everywhere, across the EU, across the developed world, across the world. Economic recession has hammered the data. It's just beginning to emerge. There's a big lag time. The HIV data that's emerged out of Greece quite recently, have people seen that? I mean, that's just terrifying. And perhaps the nub of the talk in terms of what I'm trying to achieve is the concept of co-infection. It in itself becomes a force of exclusion. The system doesn't deal with the person. The system deals with the pathogen. I stuck this up because I can. Quite simply, we are here because we care about people who are experiencing homelessness. And the numbers of people who are experiencing homelessness have gone through the roof. This is the chain data, these bars in blue. Now, I've taken a rather courageous liberty of mapping onto this graph the mean age of the population that we see on the street, and it's going down. Mm-hmm. That is wrong. That means there's a new cohort of people coming into the street. And it almost perfectly matches, doesn't it? Here we go, nice big jump, dip, level, wham. From 43 to 39. And when you screen between 8 and 10,000 people a year, that's got some pretty tight confidence intervals around it. Hep C, let's deal with that first. General population, you would screen 100 people to find, between 100 and 200 people to find one case of hepatitis C. Latent TB infection, we really don't know. It's probably way less than 2%. That data comes from big investigations around incidence and outbreaks in general population. HIV, we know pretty accurately about 0.19%, 0.2%. Amongst homeless people, ignore the top of the iceberg. We're kind of working with that. It's the stuff under the water, as we've heard from the other iceberg analogy today. One in five of the people that we screen, one in five are IGRA positive. They've got latent TB infection. One in six have got Hep C, RNA detectable Hep C. And we've got a new rate of HIV detection of 1%. And the American data says if you can achieve one in 1,000, it's cost effective. So that's terrifying. But what's also terrifying is the crossover, is the amount of co-infection between LTBI and Hep C. Now, I really like this expression, and it kind of sums up where the systems intellectually failed to provide services. It's a lovely old quote. It's a Sufi quote from a Muslim mystic in the 13th century. You think you understand two because you understand one and two, but you must also understand and. And it's the connection that kind of breaks down. People want to put you in this box because you've got TB and this box because you've got Hep C, and they don't understand what meets in the middle. And what meets in the middle is this wonderful word, syndemic. Syndemic is a word that should be ingrained in our lexicon. Syndemic takes us one step further away from the idea of disease, pathology, pathogenesis, etc., and drags us back into a real-world scenario, drags us back into society. And it simply is this. Diseases do not coincidentally co-occur. Social conditions cluster diseases, and these interact to further exacerbate the negative health effects. The classic early syndemic was substance abuse, homelessness, HIV infection, and sex work. But there is a new syndemic, and it's a syndemic that's here in this country. And it's this unholy alliance between homelessness, substance misuse, latent TB infection, and hepatitis C. It's there. So, what are we going to do about it? Well, I thought I'd bring to bear redisorganisational theory for the purposes of actually understanding how we can do something about this rather complex syndemic. Now, redisorganisational theory is an American concept that perfectly explains how large organisations, particularly the NHS, operate. And it's got a whole language of its own. Centralisation, you've got lots of money and you want to take the credit for dispensing it. Decentralisation, you run out of money and you want to pass the blame. Accordionisation, you need to keep everyone confused by continuous cycles of centralisation and decentralisation. The Americans even cited the NHS as the best example of this in the world. Indecisionisation trees, you're massively uncertain, incompetent, picking numbers out of the air and placing them in diagrams, always very useful. And then if your diagram gets exposed as a complete sham, you produce a matrix. And then ultimately all leads to what we've seen in more recent years is a black hole effect, when a reorganisation absorbs vast amounts of human and material resource without producing any measurable output. And we've been trying to further these debates within this climate, within the climate of re-disorganisation, and we're still working in it today. It's very unclear where public health is, isn't it? So, let's just remind ourselves of something quite important. There is a statutory duty within the CCGs to have due regard to the need for, that's the legalese, inequalities, and to promote integration of services. And bringing to bear some of the evidence that we've collected over the years in terms of the population need, trying to reach people, and bringing to bear some of the challenges in terms of trying to navigate our way through the system, I've tried to put together a slide that perfectly describes the response so far. Not from everyone, but generally the response that we've actually received from the system, and it looks like this. NICE guidance has been relatively useful for reasons that will remain unsaid. I was on the committee. And it now says in major urban centres and areas of identified need, commissioners should offer bloodborne virus testing alongside digital mobile radiology. We're not actually commissioned to do that yet. We're doing it all on the back of research monies and partnership with Hepatitis C Trust. And I haven't cracked a commissioning mechanism to actually provide that service yet, but I will. The Hep C one's not quite so easy to fathom. This is the latest offering. It says, recognising that people living in hostels for the homeless or sleeping on the streets are at increased risk of Hep B and C, testing should be offered in, and then I couldn't see any reference to hostels for some reason. It's just missing. It doesn't exist in the literature. We're aware of the fact that there's a staggering burden of undetected hepatitis C out there, but we've fallen into this trap of linear thinking, and therefore we're saying we're going to put all our resources into primary care and prisons, immigration removal centres, drug services, sexual health and GU medicine clinics, because that's where we're going to find all our homeless people, isn't it? Yep. That's where they all are. And all our substance misusers are currently engaging with drug treatment services. Not so useful. This is useful, and this is writ in stone, and this is why I'm here today. The new strategy, it's a TB strategy produced by Public Health England and NHS England in partnership, calls for a national service. A national service. The monies were allocated last year. So far we've been able to not been able to engage with that debate because the monies have been spent almost exclusively on new entrant screening. Nevertheless, this year apparently we might. The national service. Well, the data that we've seen from London, I mean, almost pales into its significance when you look at Birmingham and Manchester in terms of the number of people who are out there, and these are minimal estimates. The need in terms of trying to take a service to the street is truly national. And even in the smaller towns, we've just come out of High Wycombe, where they've got a major outbreak going on amongst the homeless population. So what am I pushing for? What am I trying to promote? The actual kit is quite expensive, and we don't need one in every town because they're on wheels and they can go to where they are needed. To find a system, a mechanism, in order to make that happen is the challenge. I propose three components, not one unit. The current unit was bought by University College London Hospital because both NHS England and PHE failed to step up to the plate and provide any resource. That's a call to action. We need multiple units. The Dutch have got 12 of these, 12 for the Netherlands. They are cost-saving. It's been evaluated to death. And the more we bolt onto it, the more cost-saving it becomes. We're installing portable fibre scan on the unit now. It's Hep C diagnosis in a day. You don't want to buy all this kit locally. You just want to be able to use it constructively and in partnership with us. And I'm here to work in partnership with you. Integrated screening and onward care, and perhaps the most important thing, let's make the invisible visible. Let's actually highlight the health need in the populations that we serve. So it's screening, it's vaccination, it's your full health MOT and your inclusion health survey. Ballistic theory, rocket science. When you try and launch a new service, I quickly learned that your ability to sustain that service is, or how long you're going to last, is predominantly determined by how much blast you can achieve on launch. Because, unfortunately, we all live within the laws of gravity. So, having survived for a decade on 12 months of rolling money, we're now sustainably commissioned, but it's quite difficult to motivate a team when they've only got a job for 12 months. Having survived that ordeal, I've now realised that the only way we can actually launch a service that will last and make a difference is to bring to bear some proper physics, some good rocket science. And this is the equation that captures the notion of escape velocity. The speed needed to break free from the gravitational attraction of a massive body without further propulsion, i.e. without spending more fuel. And for the purposes of this equation, I would propose that G and M are a combination of the human and organisational inertia that systems create, and I would propose that R is innovation itself. So how do we actually escape? Well, the reality is the clue is in the fuel. We're never going to be able to carry enough payload in terms of fuel to launch a project that will truly work. We have to generate fuel while in flight. And that fuel while in flight, in terms of our service, has been evidence. Evidence and advocacy. Advocacy. So we need to bring to bear the evidence base that exists in a constructive way in order to advocate for a service that I believe, the evidence says, I hope we believe, can make a difference nationally. And I propose it's built on four principles. It's built on the principles of people, not pathogens. It's built on the principles of targeting to address health inequalities and reach those in most need. It's built on the principle of peers, peer involvement. They are the glue that cements us to the street. You've had the pleasure of meeting a couple of our peers today. And it's built, most importantly, on the thing the NHS does worst, which is partnership. The NHS is pretty poor at working with the NHS, and it's useless at working with the third sector. There's an enormous army of willing and able non-health professionals out there who are an integral part of this solution. And I will be quiet, but thank you very much.